Thank you very much, and thank you for organizing this very exciting workshop. Well, today I'm going to talk about the, so how we can prove the quantum black holes by using the kind of intense seismology. This means that we can perturb the quantum black holes, then the black holes has a specific quasi-normal modes. And then by looking at the ring down gravitational waves, we can look into the kind of quasi-normal modes of the black holes. Then and those quasi-normal modes may tell us a lot of things, allow us to get deeper insight into the nature of the quantum black holes. Then the I think the first proposal about the quantum black hole is the Hawking radiation, and this is associated with thermal excitation, the quantum fluctuations around the black hole. And afterwards, black hole information loss paradox, and the idea of the stretch horizon, quantized black hole area, and so on, are proposed. So as like this, so quantum black holes has been discussed in the context of the purely theoretical side. But the question is how we can observationally prove the quantum properties, natures of the quantum black holes. Okay, so maybe you may say that, so okay, so maybe we should see the Hawking radiation observationally, but it's fairly very difficult since the Hawking temperature of the solar mass is around 10 to the minus 6 Kelvin, which is much, much smaller than the CMB temperatures. And okay, so how about the Planckian physics of space? Okay, so to reach the Planckian energy scale, with, for example, a particle accelerator, we need to build a very huge particle accelerator whose size is comparable to the solar system. So maybe we need another novel method to prove the quantum nature of the black hole. Then we are looking at the ring down gravitational waves. Okay, so this is the first event observed by LIGO. This is a signal that comes from the binary black holes. This signal consists of three phases, so in spiral, merger, and the ring down phase. Then the ring down phase comes here, so it's a kind of ripple of the black holes. Then this ring down gravitational waves consists of a quasi-normal modes. Then these quasi-normal modes depend only on the mass and the angular momentum of the black hole. So in this sense, this gravitational wave ring down is a very useful to test gravity theories. So presumably, the ring down gravitational waves may be useful even to test the quantum gravity. Okay, so maybe I will briefly review the Hawking radiation before moving on to the more exciting thing. So Hawking radiation is quantum fluctuations around the black hole horizon. Then actually, this effect depends on the observers. So for example, let's consider the accelerating observer near horizon. He or she try to escape from the horizon. And he has a uniform acceleration. Then such observer will see the Hawking radiation out of the horizon. However, a freely falling observer see nothing, and there's no drama. So in this sense, the Hawking radiation is observer dependent. If you know the Unruh effect, this is a very natural thing. Since the accelerating observer sees thermal radiation, however, static observer, of course, see nothing, since he just a static observer at Minkowski space. Yep. Then this kind of sounds like a paradox, but this picture leads to the black hole complementarity proposed by Susskind. Okay, so let's consider the observer. Try to escape from the horizon. Then such observer will see the thermal radiation whose temperature is given by this one. So this temperature is blue shifted by this factor. Then at the horizon, this diverges. So in this sense, the Hawking radiation can reach the Planckian energy scale near the horizon, like this. Then in this situation, let's consider the infalling information. This will be reflected by the stretched horizon. This is a scenario proposed in the black hole complementarity. However, if you are an infalling observer passing through the horizon, this information also goes through the horizon and nothing happens. And eventually they reach the singularity and nothing special happens. So then the point is that, okay, so if this proposal is true, this one or this one, and that's a point. Of course, we are looking at the gravitational waves coming from the black hole from a distant region. So we should take this scenario for quantum black holes. Then, if so, how we can model this situation? Then membrane paradigm tells us a very nice picture, very nice insight to do that. Well, this paradigm says that so black hole horizon behaves like a viscous fluid at the horizon. Why? So, okay, so let's consider the observer infalling into the black holes. In this case, there's an interior region and exterior region. And so let's consider the junction between the interior and the exterior spacetime. In this case, we have to calculate the extrinsic curvature at the horizon inside and outside. Then the difference between them is filled by the energy momentum tensor of the boundary between them. However, of course, there's nothing at the horizon, so it should be zero. So K plus and K minus, the curvature at the horizon, inside curvature and outside curvature, both are equivalent. This is a very trivial argument. But how about the picture of the quantum black hole from the outside static observer? In this case, there's no interior spacetime, and only the exterior region exists for such an observer. Then this means that there's no second term in this junction condition. Then the energy momentum tensor at the horizon effectively has a finite value. Not finite value, but this TAB can be expressed as like this. Then written this extrinsic curvature and the induced metric at the horizon, we can obtain the this relation. So those terms are called as shear expansion and the surface gravity in the general relativity. And this exhibits a kind of the correspondence between the gravity and the fluid, viscous fluid. Then this TAB has the pressure and the shear viscosity and the volume viscosities. So from this picture, the membrane paradigm says that the horizon behaves like a viscous fluid if there is no interior of the black hole.
Could I ask why it had to be viscous?
Sorry?
Why did you have to introduce viscosity?
Yeah, that's the point. So, okay, so maybe this is the answer. So if you are a distant observer outside the black holes, this membrane paradigm says that this horizon behaves as a viscosity, viscous fluid. And if you consider the infalling information, this stopped at the black hole's horizon, then due to the viscosity of the fluid, its information is dissipated and looks like very messy. This is like the information loss of the infalling information from infalling so.
But I think there's also a mathematical, I mean, the answer is that if you just look at that stress tensor, it has an isotropic stress. So that looks like viscosity.
Yeah.
So it's just analogy with the fluid. If you go to the previous slide, can you
okay.
So if you just use the extrinsic curvature of a perturbed black hole of some surface outside the stretch horizon, say a perturbed black hole, then it has an isotropic pressure, which looks like viscosity. So that's it just comes from calculations that based on
that. Yes, yes.
And those numbers are all from general.
Yeah, but the physical motivation is that how those pictures can be consistent from the point of view of the viscosity. So the point is that the horizon looks like a viscous fluid in this paradigm, and to model this situation, now we slightly modified this classical kind of the wave equation for gravitational waves. Well, this is the wave equation in the even or odd modes of the gravitational waves. So, for example, Rich-Hoyer equation was the equation. Then by putting the extra terms, this term, we try to model the situation of the membrane paradigm. Then this E Planck is the Planckian energy, and the gamma represents the non-dimensional parameters controlling the viscosity of the fluid. And this omega is a Bruce-shifted frequencies. So, this E Planck is a 10 to the 19 Jev, so it's extremely high. Then outside of black holes, this omega is very, very smaller than the E Planck, so that's why this factor is strongly suppressed. But near the horizon, this omega is Bruce-shifted and can reach it. Can be comparable to the Planckian energy scale, then this plays a very important role in this equation. Okay.
Sorry, I think there is a it would be a bit confusing because the previous viscosity we were talking about is for two-dimensional fluid.
Uh-huh.
Ah, yes. The viscosity in three dimensions, so there's no direct connection, I mean, between the two.
Yes. But the thickness of the membrane is very small and, yeah, pretty similar to Planckian energy.
Is in fact a thick membrane than you expect.
Yes. Yes, exactly. This has a thickness. And this proper length is comparable to the Planckian length. So that's why, yeah, this membrane has a finer thickness. Then solving this equation, we can obtain the this model functions. And then if there's no distance, this solution oscillates entirely in entire regions. However, now we have the constant behavior near the horizon. That's the biggest difference. And the angular momentum barrier, the potential of the VL exists here. And in this region, this first term becomes dominant and the solution becomes constant. Then here, we put the boundary condition so that the solution becomes constant near the horizon, since this represents no flux conditions near the horizon and due to the viscosity. So now we have the and the superposition of the ingoing flux and outgoing flux between the membrane and the angular momentum barrier. Then the point is how we can calculate the ratio between them. This represents the reflectivity of the membrane.
So going from the two-dimensional picture to a three-dimensional picture of some kind of matter or energy density, that's the main assumption, because if you go back to the original 3 plus 1 field equations, there's nothing there.
Nothing there, yeah.
I mean, it's like it's a consistent picture just to keep it two-dimensional without ever introducing the three-dimensional stuff.
So you mean
that equation assumes a three-dimensional picture.
Yes.
And you had to do that. You couldn't somehow just use the original two-dimensional source.
Two-dimensional source. But now this is a the derivative equation with respect to the Auster.
I think Bob is asking what's wrong with the original membrane paradigm. Membrane paradigm have a membrane, which is two-dimensional, and then just a derivative. So why do you have to do this?
Okay, so if you put the viscous membrane exactly at the horizon, that means that the position of the horizon in the tortoise coordinate is a minus infinity, right? So nothing happens in that case. So we should put the membrane which has a finite thickness in this situation. Then in this case, the membrane could exist in the finite value of the R star. Then, so that's why.
But then do you go back to the original 3 plus 1 field equations?
If gamma goes to zero, then you go there. So that's kind of gamma going to zero is like taking the membrane to minus.
Yeah.
Right?
But when you don't, then there's some, it's not a complete picture. You don't have a, you're not solving the original Einstein equations.
Well, I mean, the original Einstein equation is, so there's nothing wrong with GR as it is. It's perfectly very classical theory. So I don't think, at least classically, you can argue for this correction. So the idea is that if you think there are some quantum effects that happen that are Planck suppressed, then how would they change? So that's in this outside observer point of view, that basically that outside observer just sees everything outside the horizon. So as you approach the stretch horizon, you have this pollution effect. So that's the assumption. But there's no way to prove that. That's the starting point. But the motivation is the same as the membrane viscosity.
Yeah, that's where the viscosity came from.
Yeah, that's
and if you didn't have a viscosity in this equation, it wouldn't work.
Well, I mean, just everything just goes all the way to minus infinity, so there wouldn't it would
nothing happen. Yeah.
The standard GR.
Yeah, so by definition, the stretch horizon argues that the membrane exists at the outside the horizon by the Planckian rings or so. Yeah, so if that is true, yeah, something should happen. Then, solving the this equation only near the horizon where the this potential factor is exponentially suppressed. In this case, we can solve this equation analytically, and we can obtain this solution. Then this satisfies the boundary condition. Then expanding this solution near the horizon, we can solve. We can obtain the ratio between the ingoing and outgoing flux. And this leads to the Boltzmann reflection rate. This is given by e to the minus omega over th. Th is the Hawking temperature. And omega is the frequency of gravitational waves near the horizon.
So there's the other picture, which is just the truncated black hole.
Truncated by black holes. Truncated.
They're just a wall.
You mean the first factor truncates the.
Well, I'm just saying, how do we know that quantum gravity doesn't give us just a plain truncated black hole with no viscosity, but just a mirror just outside the horizon? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're just guessing what quantum effects might do, right?
Quantum effects might do. Yeah, so. In this picture, so initially the mirror might exist near the horizon, which has a perfect recreation rate. But if we believe this modification is grasps the essence of the quantum black holes, our argument is that the quantum nature of the quantum black hole exhibits this reflection rate, then we believe that this is a more physical answer. Yeah. Okay.
To derive this reflection rate, do you need to use the
quantum telescopes? Actually, that's a good point. And actually, this the information of the gamma is included in the factor A. But this doesn't change the reflection rate. So in other words, this reflection rate is independent of the value of the gamma. Yeah.
So
then, but the
position.
Yeah. Position of the reflection, the position of the membrane depends on the value of the gamma. So that's why the gamma plays a role of the parameter controlling the position of the membrane.
So does this mean that you need to choose the location of the membrane so that some condition you mentioned,
like no flux? Wherever the membrane exists, the boundary condition doesn't change. Since this just requires this model function should be constant at minus infinity.
What decides the location of the membrane? Why is gamma determining the
Actually, the value of the gamma is very important. since the position of the membrane changes the time interval of the echoes. So that's why we believe that this gamma can be also observationally constrained in the future. Yeah.
So just I wanted to just come back to Bob's point. I think his point is that, I mean, we're looking at a very specific modification of equations that gives you this. So there could be other ways of doing it, like what you did before. Like you could have a higher derivative term, for example, or you could just modify the angular momentum barrier and have just put a potential at the, so that then they would give you different results. I guess.
Yes.
So this looks nice, but it's only specific to this modification.
Actually, in original paper, we also derived the Boltzmann reflectivity from the other two independent ways arguments.
All right, so there are two papers. There is a very, very original paper.
Very original.
They have higher derivatives, yes. And then you can get different results. You affect, I mean, it's funny, you get similar Boltzmann reflectivity, but with different temperatures. But then we looked at basically some other, basically this particular case, and then some other arguments that were more general, but I mean, one may not want to believe that. That gives you both reflective. So yeah, so I mean, it seems that, I mean, this does come out in some scenarios, but there are some scenarios that it doesn't come out.
Thank you. So anyway, so now we derived the Boltzmann reflectivity, and I didn't mention the, now I cannot explain this picture since I skipped some slides, so how this reflectivity changes the ring diagonal waves, that's the next step, and this is the result. The first peak is the ring down rupture waves, and now we indeed observe the multiple echoes. It's a first echoes, second echoes, and it looks like then the for various spins of the black hole, we calculate the echoes, and it looks like there's no any instabilities, and why do we care this instability? Is that so? There's such a papers about the echoes. So super radiance. This is a phenomenon. Some reflected waves can extract the energy of the spin. Can extract the spin energy from the spinning black holes. So in this sense, due to the super radiance effects, the reflection rate of the angular momentum barrier of the black hole can exceed the unity. Then this super radiance plus the reflectivity of the quantum black holes might lead to the Edwardian instabilities. So this is a membrane, and this is an angular momentum barrier, and the echo is a phenomenon of the reflection between them. And then the reflectivity exceeds the unities, so 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4, blah, blah, blah. Then the energy is infinitely increases. Then this leads to the instabilities of the spinning black holes. However, and so now we should care these instabilities. So we should solve the model equation in the spinning cases. And in this case, now we are adding the this modification factor into the Sasaki Nakamura equation, then calculates the Actually, now we choose the Sasaki Nakamura equation. However, other equation, for example, Chandrasekhar Detweiler equation is also fine. Then calculates the reflectivity near the horizon. Then we obtain these reflectivities. So this is the Hawking radiation for spinning black holes. And this omega tilde is the horizon frequencies. So this is a frequency measured near the horizon. Then Hawking temperature is given by this one. Then intuitively, this Hawking temperature goes to zero in the extremal case. So that's why this reflectivity is strongly suppressed for highly spinning black holes. Then fixing the spin parameters of the black hole near the extremal case, we calculate the product between the reflectivity of the angular momentum barrier and the membrane's reflectivity. Then if this value exceeds the unity, the instability takes place. But if the, sorry, I should explain the what's TQH. The TQH is the generalized Hawking temperature. This is now parameters. Then if this TQH is a Hawking temperature, this we should look at the black line. Then there's no instabilities, that's like this. So the Boltzmann reflectivity model, this is a red line, always above the region of the ergo region instabilities, up to the sound limit, 0.998. So from this reason, we argue that no ergo region instability for Boltzmann reflectivity model. Then, okay, so I should wrap up my talk.
We could have some final questions as well.
Yeah. Okay. Then the yeah, the next project is how we can prove the quantum gravity itself by the ring diagonal waves, such as a loop quantum gravity, whatever exists gravity, or causal dynamical triangulation. Then the some of the candidates of the quantum gravity predicts the modified dispersion ratio at the Planckian scale. So if we consider the modified dispersion ratio with the blue shift effect near the horizon, due to the blue shift effect, the gravitational waves may be drastically modified due to the modification, Planckian modification in the dispersion ratio. So from this sense, we might be able to see the kind of footprint of the quantum gravity. Then, okay, I will skip the. Then in the very first paper with Niyash, we modified the dispersion ratio as like this, plus the dissipation terms. And dissipation terms comes here. Then we solve we calculate the quasar normals. Then this is a log scale of the imaginary part of the quasar normal modes. And then this is very, very small. This means that there exists a long-lived mode in this model. And
for which spin, sir?
For which spin? Spin means back field of spin?
No, no, the spin of the
This is non-spin case. Then the spectrum of the gravitational waves has a multiple excitation modes. Black dashed line is the GL, general relativity's case, and the red one is with modification. then now we see the echoes, even in this case. And the time interval between the echoes is depends on the factor C. And now we put the gamma equals to zero, but this might be the answer for the Benny's question. So the gamma also determines changes delta T echoes. We want that. Then, however, the previous one is a kind of toy model to grasp the essence of the quantum gravity. And now we need to test the real quantum gravities. And for example, Hojabovsky's gravity is the next target. Then the Hojabovsky's gravity exhibits the very novel structure of the quantum black holes. It has the horizon inside the Killing horizon of the black holes. So in this sense, the black holes in the Hojabovsky's gravity may drastically change the quasi normal modes of the gravitational waves. I should finish the talk since, yeah.
Do you have a conclusion
on this
slide?
Or do you want
to...
no, actually, yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot, Nerissa. Questions?
So, we get some date,
does it
depend on October?
October.
Yeah,
it
depends on the October, right?
Your
expression for the reflection rate has a working temperature in it. The means does not depend on observers.
If you consider the infalling observer, nothing happens, no drama. So that's why in this sense, the reflectivity should be zero. So in this sense, it's observer dependent.
No other questions, comments? Okay, let's thank Naritaka again.
Thank you.